Hello, everyone. This is Kathleen Francis, the host of Wise Women. And we're very excited today to have a very accomplished and most certainly a wise woman by the name of Paula Shaw. She is an accomplished American actress, a life member of the Actors Studio, and she has portrays so many interesting characters in films and television. And she played the role as the prostitute and Barney Miller, and she was the centerfold girls of Mrs. Walker. She played in The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas and The X-Files and Freddy versus Jason. She played in that horror film. So with that said, please welcome Paula Shaw. Hi, Paula.
Hey, Kathy. You know, it's so funny that you mentioned, of all the more serious or interesting projects that I've ever worked on, the one that is featured in Wikipedia as my claim to fame is this Mrs. Voorhees,
yes,
mask killer's mother in front of her station. You know,
I know
conferences for that. It's hilarious. You know, it really is. I once told an audience, the way I got that role is up here in Vancouver. I screamed. The director wasn't even there, but I could, and at the conference, when they asked me, I said, hey, you want to hear it? I said, you better be ready, so that was my greatest asset for that
role. For that role. Well, because you have the skill to really know how to let go, which a lot of people don't. It's been very interesting for me as an acting coach to see that. I know in one class, I often will get up and perform myself to show certain things about the exercises I learned from Sanford Meisner. And so I did an improv, and I was very raw and very real. And the circumstances were such that something triggered something, but I never saw him again. That was the last time he came to class. He couldn't deal with the raw energy, the raw emotion.
Scare the you-know-what out of them.
Well, and I think that many men have a hard time dealing with, someone screaming. So you'll have to forgive my hoarse voice for this show. I hope you don't mind. I myself.
Oh, I mind. What are you going to do about it?
Well, I did a show myself.
I'll give you the lessons, except you're too far away to put it.
Oh, yeah, there you go. But now, also, I really do want people to know that you're a multifaceted human being, and not the least of which, with all of your wonderful accomplishments as an actress, you were part of the S program, you were part of the Actors Institute, and then you created the Max. And Paula is considered one of the top, if not the top, seminar and workshop leader at Esalen. And she has had tremendous impact on the lives who have come through those workshops, and on probably everybody's life who she has known and given counsel to over the years. It's every couple of years that we might connect, but that's the kind of human being that Paula Shaw is. So Paula, so what would you like to focus most on? That, again, the purpose of this podcast is to give people an opportunity to garner some wisdom from those of us who have been down the road a bit, and you and I have, and be able to bring some wisdom to those who are younger, still in processes that we have gone through and have learned from. And so tell me, what do you feel of anything you feel most proud of?
Proud is a funny word. I don't know. Being able to have made a difference in people's lives, you know that phrase.
Yeah,
have people
sure.
tell me that they did. And the workshop you mentioned particularly comes to mind, that I've been doing it at Esalen for about 35 years.
Has it been that long?
Unbelievable.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God, I can't even, you know, what was the first one we did was in 88. And it was The Mastery at that time, which was created by Dan Fosse, who was like
Absolutely.
a graduate seminar leader for Werner Erhard in the Yes Training. And he was also a producer
Yes.
and actor. And so he started that. And then, you know, he came to LA, he started in New York. We opened the Actors Institute New York, which of course I was associated with and ran for a good part of you know, the years. And what he, the first Mastery was in 1979. And then what
Oh
happened?
my.
Yeah.
Oh.
And eventually, and I stayed around S till about 82. And then I was invited. They had done the Mastery in Findhorn, Scotland. And I was invited because I guess whatever, they couldn't send it from New York because I was in California, send someone, which they may have regretted much. But they asked me, can you go? And I took it. It was a weekend workshop at that point, and I took it to Esalen at 88 and did it with the staff. And it blew the place up. I mean, people went nuts. At first, they were very resistant. This was not a what I call a pillow workshop. You know, where you sit around and cry. You know, this was, it came from acting, and it was about really, oh, somebody, the purpose of it was that you are the source of your own creativity. When I, Esalen, the hours were such, you couldn't contain it in a weekend, and everybody was asking, because I did it for staff for 2 weeks, for 2 years as an in-house workshop, and people who were taking other courses would see these people carrying on. You know, acting this and that, out doing assignments with each other, and saying, "What the hell are they doing? I want to do what they're doing." And I was approached by the program's director. She said, "Can you make this into a 5-day course?" Which I did, and reconfigured it and changed some and called it the Max, right? And the purpose for that course that came to me was to discover yourself beyond who you know yourself to be.
Oh, what a great question or concept to even ponder.
Yeah, well, that was what we were up to. And so it was really through acting, each person would get on the stage. It was about unpeeling yourself down to the places where you may have, where you got stopped, usually very early in life. You stuffed it, you swallowed it. And what happened? And it changed over the years in the way I did it because, you know, we said, where did it go? When you have those traumas, where did it go? It didn't just go into the air. It went into your body. Okay. Now, we know
Yes.
a lot of it would come up there. But in this case, you were on a stage and it would come up. And it wasn't was why you sad. It was, you know, I might, people get up there and of course they'd get anxious. And I'd say, where in your body are you feeling it? Say, oh, I'm nervous. I said, nervous is general. Tell me where. Okay, so when they began to go to the body sensations, my knees are shaking. Breathe into it. My shoulders are tight. Instead of trying to fix them, breathe into it. And of course, that would unearth what got stored there. And then people always have a choice. I never, as it, you know, I used to say, I used to use a hatchet, you know, to go in. I ended up with a laser. And people had choice. I didn't, I, no more B&As. I would not break and enter. People could entertain what came up or not. And they were facing an audience. And of course, it was very confronting. The audience was there to kind of hold the space and be for people on the stage, whoever might have done it to them, you know, whatever might have done it to them. And they had the opportunity to get it out of your body, say what you didn't say then. To your mother, your father, your teacher, your friend, your, you know, and it would, and Kathy, it was incredible. I actually saw this energy move and this stuff come out of people and things that they said. So very powerful work, extremely. And when people were freed up, one of the things, of course, we did there was give acting assignments. So for instance, let's say I could somebody get on stage, I couldn't hear them. What's that about? Well, turned out when we got to it, she had a mother who was very controlling and rageful and I guess I think an alcoholic. When she said, I made the decision, I will never, ever, ever be that way. So what she did was, you know, contract herself, and she spoke like that everywhere she went.
Oh.
I asked her, it just came up because things would just come up to me. I said, do me a favor, can you do an imitation of your mother?
Oh.
Yeah. And here this whole other human being came forth with a big voice, right? I mean, absolutely powerful. And so what, I might give her an assignment. This is just an example. This would happen all the time with people in different ways. I said, okay, here's your assignment. On the breaks, because that's when the assignments were done with the other people in the workshop, I want you to be your mother.
Oh, and go perfect.
People and tell them what to do, what they should and shouldn't do. And of course, there's often a lot of humor that came with it. She'd go over to people and say, no, that coffee is bad for you. I know you have a nervous stomach. Let me get you a cup of tea, you know? And so, you know, people would do it. They would recover their little scared children that got shut down. They'd become five-year-olds and find other people to play with, you know? Kathy, I cannot tell you how powerful this was. And in fact, we had to sometimes contain them because they'd want to do it with everybody. Said, no, they're in a different workshop, you know?
Ah!
Some fellow had been beaten up, you know, he moved from British Columbia to to the East Coast, and they made fun of him, the Quebecois kids in school. And so some others decided they want to do something. They told him, now, mind you, we may kind of attack you. Is that, he said, no, that's fine. So on the break, on the lawn or on the, you know, on the deck, they'd come up and they'd start beating him up. Now, not really, of course, but the other people in other workshops said, who is that crazy woman? What is she doing? People are beating each other up, you know? Anyway, there was all kinds of people who were homeless people, who were angry homeless people, would wander around, you know, just talking. And of course, eventually, I apprised the other leaders who were fine with it, not fine with it. I said, tell your people if they see people acting out like that, it's an acting assignment, you know? And
yes.
So people would recover themselves or disowned parts of themselves, right? And
yes.
So much more to say about it, but that's just one of the dynamics. We had a number of different sections of that workshop. It was longer than other workshops. It was 5 days, it was 35 hours. And they would end up, you know, doing a creative piece as a group. There was a lot of it. There was, Kathy, there was so many tears, you know, so much deep grief and sadness that came forth. But there was also humor, so much humor, you know, so much playfulness. I love leading that workshop. Love it.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah. Now, Esalen had to, when they opened up again, they said, we can't do it right now. We have a whole different dynamic here with the staff and we're afraid we can't contain the workshop because we used to put a lot of things in place unless we did it as the only workshop, also because of COVID and people were what we call droplets, because they're emotional exercise where people are right in each other's faces. So for the time being, it got suspended. She'd never said, we're never going to do it here again. There are a number of other places we can do it. I have not been able to. I've been basically stuck up here in Vancouver, in Canada, for almost 3 years. Right? The last
Because of the COVID.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes, you couldn't travel.
Oh, my God.
It was all about. Anyway, so that was that work. And I did many other workshops at Edison. I did many. I led month-long work scholar programs where people would come to drop out, you know, and do the work of the logistics of taking care of Esalen and have a leader for the month. Who's?
Oh my goodness! I did not know that.
Oh my God! I did that for years, Kathy. So I would spend often. There were years when I'd spend at least 3 months at Esalen, doing in-house month-longs, week-longs, weekends. Yes, I did. And of course, you know, so that was a huge part of my life since 1988, you know. And then, of course, you know, Linda and Larry and I came up here to Vancouver in 82. That's how I got here with the first master up here. And eventually what happened is I started getting more acting work in Vancouver than I did in L.A. And that's how I decided to emigrate, you know, because I love
yes.
well, and also why I didn't become, which I was set to become an EST trainer. And then a
former, yes.
I'm an actress. I had what I called, I lied. I said, you know, because their context for you was a graduate seminar leader. And if you became a trainer, you know, or form leader, it was like what I call taking the veil. It's like putting a white collar on, you know, because you were now that. You were, a missionary, a priest, whatever. And I said, I've had an incredible run here. I said, but I come from a former, my context really is actress. And I can't get over it, you know. So I came mm-hmm. back, but then continued doing the work in another form. As I've led so many different courses at Esalen. I've led with other people too. A friend of mine, she was an expert dream workshop leader. So I would do, because I also led improv workshops there. And often at the
end of the class, you were such a great improv teacher.
Oh, those courses that often people would stay after the max for the weekend, because that was the 5-day. And then for the weekend, we did this outrageous improvisational workshop. So I did that. I did those. I cannot tell you how many. I did a number of, which, you know, because I shared the letter with you, aging, women and aging workshops, right? And, you know, I asked the question, where's the growth in growing older? You know, they talk about growing older. I said, excuse me, you know, it seems to be shrinking older, you know, physically yeah. and, you know. So those workshops were great. For instance, we would, because I always, despite all the emotional stuff that would come up in my workshops, very deep work with people, I always kept the humor and the playfulness. I would not work without that, you know? So that
yes.
anytime, what I call the irreverence, you know, that
yes.
you can't keep your irreverence in life. What the hell, you know, what are we doing here? If we yes. can't play. So that was added in. And we, like, for instance, one thing we did, just as an exercise, we said, okay, on the board, because, you know, the women that took that workshop were older, some really older, some just facing getting older and scared to death. So we made a list. Okay, so it's a list of all the not-so-happy things that happen when you get older. Right. And we just would on the board, you know, farting, you know, just anything you think of. It went on that list. Pretty much we, stomach ulcers, you know, getting shorter, getting arthritis, all the things that happen as you get older. Kathy, we just kept putting them up there. And, you know, after a while, it just happened naturally. People just started laughing. You know, it was just so
yes.
so outrageous.
Yes.
So impossible. And so, you know, that and like the farting kind of stuff, the little things and the warts and the things.
Yeah.
Women in
yes.
workshops. So, you know, women would put things up there that they wouldn't put up there if men were in the room, you know.
Correct.
Things that happened in their bodies you know, and in parts of their bodies that they wouldn't admit to, you know, what was going on as
yes.
you
were
there.
Well, it brings to mind Shelley Winters, you know, and how she handled, you know, her body aging and such. She was such a good friend of yours from,
yes.
you know, from the Actors yes. Studio.
Yes, I and, was very, very lucky to, she was looking for someone to replace. She was doing Gingerbread Lady and touring, and I happened to be working in a scene. Anyway, I'm looking for a Jewish princess, an aging Jewish princess, right? She'd see me in that scene, and I approached her. And, you know, eventually I did Gingerbread Lady with her in Houston for 6 weeks. And she was that way. We played best friends, and we became best friends. You know,
aww.
Right away. And she was yeah. not so happy with my you know, coming to Canada and being here, you know.
I can imagine.
Yeah, but I, you know, I've traveled back and forth as long as she was with us. And I mean, I can tell you so many stories about that. But she, my God, she was such an incredible, incredible human being, you know.
She was.
And again, the kind of person where we appreciated one another because that we were you know, authentic. Okay.
That's the whole thing right there, is the authentic part. You know, it was so interesting because I had just gotten this wonderful video that, you know, talked about trees and they're, you know, they are sentient beings that are, you know, are alive and are, the roots are connected to all of the other trees. And if you remember every time when Shelley would leave her house, the first thing she would do is go to the tree. Hold her hand on the tree, put her forehead on that tree. And I was never quite sure what prayer she was saying or what she was doing. But for her, that was her, like,
a grounded
protection.
Her.
Protection. Yeah.
Yes. Now, Kathy, I don't want to interrupt you, but regarding trees, I have to tell you about my relationship with trees, because I have trees. In my life, I have trees. I have one in on June Street in the park, in the Bruno Valentino Block Park on the corner. This stunning tree. I don't even know what kind it is, but I call her Valentina. And whenever I go there and I talk to her and I pray to her and that's in L.A. Now up here, I got a few. I had one years ago that there's a lot of incredibly gorgeous ancient tree trunks, you know, when they cut down the old growth here. And I'll send you sometime photos, because you go in the woods and I have photos of them and they're like gods. You know, my original one I named Tiki. And out of Tiki, it started to rot. Little trees grew from his, you know, from the rot of the trunk. You know,
so
he was the master tree. And, you know, I sat with Jim, do you remember Jim, when he was little, and sat and communed and cried, and Tiki took care of me. Now, here's the deal, though. Okay, so there's one down in the park, 15 minutes from me. I can go right to the seawall, to Jericho Park. There's a gorgeous, I've got to send you, a stunning, stunning tree. I call it a celebrity tree. Everybody knows this tree. It's a catalpa. That's whatever the kind of tree it is, you know, catalpa. And I have so many photos of this. And I go there whenever I go to take that walk. I go and hug that tree and talk to that tree.
Wow.
Branches have come off of it in a way it's made it almost even more interesting. These branches that remain from people, you know, at the folk festival or getting married, sitting on the branches. You know, they finally had to put a sign.
Oh, my goodness.
But my current tree, which I see all the time because it's right down the block in the block park, there was a little evergreen, right? And it was kind of falling over. Well, I put shells on it, I filled in the ground. So now that tree, and I've watched it, it's, you know, just straightened up a bit. It's still bent over, but I call her Forever Greena.
Oh, that is so
cute. Not just first it was evergreen. And I said, no, forever greener. She's going to certainly outlive me, right? And some of the people I know, friends of mine, I've turned on to forever greener, go and commune with her. I go and she has, you know, she's still, you know, she's not taller than me. She will be. But her branches, you know, and I go and I touch them and I talk to her and I say what I want, you know. And process things that I'm going through that are difficult. I just get out there.
Yes.
So that's my other one. There's also one in England somewhere. But anyway, so I had to tell you, when you mentioned Shelley, I didn't even remember that connection. Of course I remember. She would go out and touch that tree every time.
Yes, every time, whenever we left.
You know, so there
that was the first thing before getting into the car to go anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. You know. Because they are anchored, you know, and
exactly
much longer. They've been here a lot longer than we have. The same tree, even, you know.
Yes, exactly. And it stood in front of her home, you know, as a protection as well. I mean, wouldn't that be a nice assignment for everybody listening to the podcast today to, if everybody decided to go out and adopt a tree?
Well, let a tree adopt you.
Now, oh, yes.
Around, you know, look around because they're there. And you know, that tree hugging, you know, that's it, man. It's the best.
It is true.
You're not going anywhere.
No, you know. You know what I love is you still have that childlike enthusiasm, that zest for life, that ability to really be excited. And you never lost that. And that's such a wonderful, and your beautiful, clear eyes, they're so pretty. And that's, you know, that's, and your smile, there's, you know, there's that Paula smile. And, you know.
I'm sorry, yeah, to interrupt you. It's not that I had that, it's that I discovered that. When I was a kid, I was scared, I was, you know, I was worried. I was in a family where, you know, by the way, I have to tell you, in my family, I always say, you know, people take my workshops, they were abused by their parents. I say it was the other way around. I abused them. Because my parents, I love them and grew to love them after they passed more than ever. But my father was a gentle, he never yelled. My mother was in hysteric, you know, she was bipolar, I realized later. She was trying to parent me and set boundaries, but she couldn't. My father said, she'll be fine, trust her. So I had to kind of parent myself. I wouldn't take their, you know, their instruction. So it was very odd. So what I'm saying is, as a kid, I was very, you know, I guess, what is that word? You know,
rebellious?
Well, I was very
rebellious.
Yeah, well, I was rebellious. Yeah, but I was also kind of hypervigilant, right? And hypervigilant, which is actually a term a lot related to recovery, I think, which is always watching out, vigilant, you know, of being threatened in some way, you know. And I was suppressed, you know. I mean, you know, well, the S training was the major transformational workshop in my life, which
wasn't that extraordinary.
But I wanted to tell you, because you said about keeping it, I don't have that kind of memory of remembering all the joy of my childhood. I don't, you know, but that I discovered more as I went along, my playful and my outrageous self, Kathy. Okay.
Oh, yes.
Developed over the years. It's not like I can be a little kid now and I play with kids and I love them. And I can be a little girl and I can do that, you know, now I'm a little girl,
right.
I remember being, but that was an unfolding for me, you know.
That's such a wonderful insight, because to even have people consider the possibility that they could come from, let's say, a dark beginning and be able to, you know, be have that childlike innocence, that authenticity that we all, I think, want to have down deep inside.
Yeah,
that authenticity is something that moves people, you know.
Well, that's why one of the big things why people have children, and if they're open to it, they play with their children, and that's where they bees the kid they never were, or return to that kid that got squashed, is to play with their children, right?
Very good. That's a wonderful insight.
And they're animals.
True.
Where people
allow the animals, yes,
to be unguarded, and somehow we have permission to love unconditionally, to express,
yes,
you know, well, yes, you're adorable, what a cute little doggy, you know.
Right. Yes, you know, to be that, you know, it's somehow a universal permission to become that with children and with animals. It's so true.
Yes, that's correct. Animals and children and babies, you know.
Yes.
You know, those little wrinkled, ugly things that we, you know, but the babies, you know, whether we adore because the spirit, it's pure, it's unvarnished, and it's right there.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
New.
Exactly. Yes.
So, yeah.
Well, I know that, you know, we had many moments there in those workshops, and, you know, there's something sacred and holy, I think, about that work. We've both witnessed extraordinary things happen, breakthrough moments that happened for people that we knew would indeed change their lives forever.
That's correct.
And, you know, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's.
Do you know what I remember, of course? I'll never forget. And I don't have a good specific, you know, memory for conversations or specific. But do you remember when you asked for a memorial for yourself?
Oh, honey, that was the process for that last workshop that we had, the samurai that Dan Fossey created for us.
There you go. How many people get to experience that? You know,
Paula, I have thought many times to actually create a workshop around that because, you know, it was an extraordinary experience. And part of what was extraordinary about it was, you know, laying there. I had to lay there with my white gown and my lily and hardly breathe while people talked about me.
Yes.
You know, friends, you and of course, my former husband, and he was already with Linda Day George at the time. And to hear them say things about me and the relationship they had with me that was completely shocking, surprising to me. Just, you know, I had no idea.
Of course,
they thought that.
Is that we're not going to, we don't know this for a fact, but probably the best things that will ever be said about us will be at our memorials, and we won't be there to hear it. But you wanted
exactly.
to be there to hear it. You know?
Exactly. And then you remember Melanie Noble, who adores you, of course. And then I Melanie Noble.
Of course, yeah.
Melanie Noble. Yes. And I was laying there being very good about playing dead. And then she said, well, the one thing I just hope is that the next time I come back, that I'll be a dog that Kathy owns. Because I take
such good care
of her. Nobody's
going to get treated better than that. Right?
Then yeah. I started to giggle and, you know, chuckle. And you know, that was just hard to, you know, to play dead when she said that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's a wonderful process for sure.
Yeah. So,
you know, and it's like, isn't it kind of the atmosphere, today's insanity that we're all in the midst of, to tell people how much we love and care for them, or even to say the hard things, you know, clear things up, get to a place of authenticity in your relationships, and then with your relationship with yourself, your relationship with God, whatever that is, you know.
Totally. Well, you know, it's back to things that I, of course, and I learned in the Yes Train, I became aware of, which is that people go or live in survival, fear of, you know, everything comes down to, is this going to kill me? You know, is this a threat to my survival? And without being consciously aware of it, whether it's all the politics that's going on, whether it's the shape of the planet, what's this, you know, viruses, whatever it is, there seems to be just such a spike in the last few years in the perceived threat. Okay. And out of that perceived threat, and also the isolation, because then people are, you know,
yes.
They don't go. They don't, you know, interact in person. They don't interact physically, right? Keep your distance.
Yes. Right.
You know, they mask themselves. It's really so sad, and there's a price to pay, and we have been paying heavily. So that, you know, we have to find your tribe, whatever it is, left, right, or you know, and join up and you know. And so we lose personal, authentic perspective. We identify and, you know, I don't listen. This is an endless conversation.
yes, Gary has,
you know, how the
an endless conversation every day, his show. You know,
Who
5 days a week, he has this ongoing conversation about those things that you just
with
mentioned.
whom? With Michael?
Gary Null.
Oh,
No,
Gary,
Gary
no.
Null.
Oh, I see.
I know your hearing isn't what it used to be. Now, of
No,
course,
it isn't.
he created this podcast for me. He has, you know, his network is the longest running radio network on health and nutrition in America. And so he addresses these survival issues, all those things you mentioned, every day by bringing on, people who are experts in the field. He brings only the facts to the picture and does his best to disseminate pertinent information. And then, of course, what any of us can do is people will do what they're going to do with it. You know, there's no way to and there, you know, I mean, disinformation is the ridiculous term, because it's all disinformation. They're all, we won't go there because we'll, I don't know.
Well, there's so much, Kathy, and I have tried, to get all sides. I mean, that's what I think of myself as. Is that you say, what do you think I have to offer people? And for me, it's expanding your own context, making your context larger, more expansive, expanding your perspective so that you don't fall into those kind of stuck places of belief that you hold on to as if your life depended on it because you feel threatened if somebody disagrees and presents you some, and
Oh.
whether it's whatever it's about, whether it's about vaccines, whether it's about who what politically who you align yourself with, there are so many things. And I and my thing is just I mean, tell the truth as you see it, as you go along, and notice. That's basically it. I don't know if you looked at the letter. Did you look at the GIF that revolves around the Max? Keep your eyes open. I can even trust it right now. I have to look it up myself. But breathe into it. Trust the process is basically it, right?
Trust the process, yes.
Because again, it's all we know that is real. You cannot prove to me there's anything else but the process. You want to disbelieve it? You want to fight with it? You want to resist it? You want to deny it? You want to manipulate it? The process will go on and on and on. And regardless of what you believe, we play the intentions game, not wishing. We intend. We do them, and we create. We know we create out of intention. I got that gift. And what will happen happens. Having laid that all out, what happens happens. And it's like, oh, it didn't go that way. This happened instead. I got
Yeah.
and as I say, I
Yeah,
always
I planned my day and then God showed up.
exactly. So, as much as you can, you have your reactions to it and your anger with it, your resentment of it, and me, me is the I'm a hopeless regretaholic. I say, he was like, oh, don't regret, don't what did he wrote a book? Did he Bob Dylan, Don't Look Back? I said, yeah, easy for him to say, don't look back. But the point is, I got that gift from I call it, say gift sarcastically, from my mother, who was a world class Olympic champion regretaholic. And that's the automaticity. I can try to beat myself up. I can try to shut myself up. I can try to not think that way. That's the system. The system, which is conditioned from early childhood, and the most we can do, I think, is become aware of it and tell the truth about it. And as that happens, you have the opportunity and the possibility, if not to let go of those things and change in that regard, which for me, I never changed, but to look at it, oh, there it is again. Laugh about it if you can, or watch it and let it go. And it, kind of fade into the everything, nothing of your field. It comes and goes in and out of the field. Oh, there it is. Oh, it happened. Oh, today I thought this, and then that happened. And so that's because who we are is context. We are who holds all of that. And the system is the system. It's not who we are, but it's a huge part of our reality, all our conditioning, you know? So that's what yes. I was trying to, and it's harder when you live alone, you know, and without a man, because I fall into my head all the time and get, you know, concerned and worried and scared and you know, whatever.
Was your mother's name Greta?
No, that's my sister.
Oh, because I heard Regretta.
that's hilarious. Oh, my God. I never thought about that. Yeah.
Regretta.
Then there's my relationship with that is hilarious, Kathy. That's pulling that out to me.
These things pop in, you know, it's like I always laugh at what I hear.
You know, listen, I know I'm doing obviously most of the talking and interrupting, but you.
Oh, that's the whole point.
Okay. Well, you are an inspirational interviewer, I have to tell you. And of course, it doesn't hurt that you know me, right? So, and we're tuned into one another, you know. This is great. You know, there would be no end to this if we went on and on. There's everything.
It is so true. Yeah, the things that I don't know. I've lost a lot of people, as have many people have lost so many friends and family, and it's hard for me because I feel like those people carry parts of myself
That's
in
correct.
Their memories, and as I do with them, and it's like you know parts of us falling off, you know, the consciousness map, and it's a challenge for people.
That's the hardest part of aging. Everything is about loss, permanent loss.
Oh.
Not like, I wrote in the letter, it's not like, you know, oh, we're facing a new challenge. We got to get through this and then it'll go back. So it's not going back to anything. It's loss and more loss, right? Whether it's the loss of people, the loss of a body function, the mental functioning, everything is about loss. So what are you going to do about that? You know? That's what you gotta deal with or not deal with. It doesn't matter if you choose to or not. That's what's gonna happen and that's what's happening. And you know.
So what input do you have on that?
Well, what do you mean? What do I have on that? I already told you. I don't have anything on that beyond. And you mentioned it too. You have a community. You do it through Gary Null. You do it on a regular basis. I have some lovely friends up here. Unfortunately, the ones in California, you know, I can't have that. You know, that's been a very tough choice for me. But you know, however, I keep in touch with them and with myself, because you know, this acknowledging loss, better get used to it, kiddo, if you're not already.
Yes.
You know, because it's not you know, it's not getting better. So what do I have on that? I'm sad about that, you know, but that hurts.
Yeah,
the continuing
loss.
And what is there to do about it? I don't know. Notice it. Notice it. Breathe into it when you can remember to breathe, right? Notice the.
Yeah.
There are always ironies connected with it. There's a lot of humor. I wish I should have made a list of that all the time. I see things happening that blow my mind. I don't know how to say it. I would have to give examples of it. That things, you know, go away that I didn't think that's the way it would manifest, you know?
And
if you remember, do you remember the Carlos Castaneda books?
Yes.
On one, a separate reality. And what I see.
Yes, I remember.
So people have to separate, you know, God and the devil. Well, okay, you want to do God and the devil. Well, given the state of the world and the way people behave, no wonder. You know, I watch those murder shows. I find them fascinating. You know, it's like, regardless of how you feel, how can you bring yourself to murder somebody? you lose it. And by the way, I was thinking the other day when they said, oh, they decide what's insane and when you're insane and when you're not. And also when you're under 18, you're treated. Well, why? Because you're run by impulse control. You don't have any, you know, when you're under 18, you just do what you feel like doing. But even once you, are considered responsible for your actions, I don't get it. I mean, as if you do control, as if you have a conscious choice when you get into a state like that where you would murder your wife and your children, mm-hmm. And they say, oh, how they define it. Because unless you're schizophrenic, which means something really takes you over and you have no choice, they define it as, do you know it was right? If you knew it was wrong, then you're responsible. Well, hello, how much in our lives do we do that we know is wrong and we're compelled anyway?
Oh, yes.
And whether it's eat chocolate, whether it's food addiction, which is mine, there are things that I know I do on a regular basis and I don't feel like I have any control. I'm compelled. Once in a while I can make
it. I understand.
Right? And once in a while I can make an intervention, stop it. But it usually just delays it from happening again.
Yes.
So it's a very, my God, it's a very problematic thing to know how to deal with people. You gotta, people are going to be doing stuff like that. You gotta stop them, however you do, right? And isolate them. I don't know about executing them, but and we're still at this point in our lives. What the hell are we doing playing war?
What isn't that the truth?
I mean, come on.
Hello, isn't that just the pathetic truth?
First century, what the hell are we still doing that for? And particularly given what's at stake in terms of what we can now really do, annihilate each other. Yeah. Now, I have to add, and I love men, and I this is not from any kind of hatred of men, but if women were running things, would there be war the way it is? Would there? I mean, look at the leaders.
I would certainly hope not, although, we have queens. And
would Angela Merkel have started a war? I don't think so.
I don't know.
That's a whole other topic about.
It is.
Who if they were in power. I don't think war is a woman's game. It's a man's game.
Yeah.
And it's a man's game.
Oh, it's a money game, sweetie. It's a money and power game.
As well, yeah. Money is power. It's a power game. Like it goes back to saying men have a hard time expressing their feelings, right? Hard time exposing their vulnerability. Not all, they're right, men who are fantastic with that. But most men can't. So they get sublimated and they get projected. And so instead of revealing when they're little and you can see all the horrible child abuses or child killers, how they themselves, hello, is this a surprise? And they suppressed it and swallowed it. And then it came out and they projected it and killed people either, individually or, let's team up and do war.
Yeah.
So I don't know how far we've come with all of that. Doesn't look good.
Well, I always see it from a spiritual perspective. And for me, it's a battle between good and evil. And, I'm very informed on how we came to where we are right now, including, the J.P. Morgan clan that met Jekyll Island in the 20s. And that was what caused the crash. Because they they took over the monetary system. And there's still people that don't know this. And
whatever it is, that's us. Whatever you're going to tell me, that's us. It's not just an evil thing over there. I mean, it doesn't matter. You can tell me all you want about who did what and took over what. Nobody has the kind of power to get the whole world in hand. You know, it's going to be interesting how the United States turns out, because we keep getting compared with, you know, other countries, and we're not other. We are a bunch of countries in one, you know, area.
The United Countries, the United States, but it's like the United Countries. Yeah.
Well,
because, you know, the states have very different perspectives, and then there are internal conflicts there as well, you know. And so, you know, that makes definitions of, you know, the way that they approach their political and or authoritative constructs in each state. And, you know, I had no idea that I was, you know, when I was younger, I was blissfully ignorant. And now I'm very informed, and little did I ever, you know, in my own right, I feel like I am an activist just because I've really educated myself. And so, you know, people that come into my shop, we talk, I tell them, listen to my podcast, Gary's podcast, be informed. And people are being forced to become educated in what's going on, because we're all at the effect of these things. So,
well, when you tell me that something is about money, you know, what is money? What the fuck does that mean, money? Money. Oh. You know what I'm saying?
Money, it's the kind of money we're talking about, is so that they have the kind of power,
of course,
to dominate the narrative. Policies are instigated by you know, big money, yeah, to sway it in their direction. And that's what's really going on. It's not left, right, Republican, Democrat. It's not Trump or Biden, or it is for me, they are the globalists who basically want us boiled down to 500 million people on the planet, period. That's what the Georgia Stones were. And their agenda to accomplish that is what we're in the midst of. So, you know, it's an interesting condition we find ourselves in. And there are just some of us that still remember the way life used to be, you know?
Uh-huh. Wow.
The way life used to be. And basically, they really want us dead, because, you know, they have, they're taking the children. They're just taking the children and indoctrinating them in their ideology, so that there is no resistance.
Well, we're talking about generally, you know, and, you know, I don't like generalities, although Werner used to say, generalities are true, generally. Isn't that hilarious? And so when I look at, you know, like I watch a Bill Maher, I love his show. I love the quality of the conversation, and he's very eclectic, and he's got a lot of humor. So much humor. And then he does a rant. The last, I was listening to some old shows about what's happening to young men. And the fact of the matter is, you know, you say, okay, they're taking over the children, not just men. But again, sitting in a computer with your head, you know, not going out of the house, not showing up anywhere, not being with other people, not no community, you know. So you do your work online, and then you go to porn. So the first thing they do, that we allow, is children at, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, their sexuality is totally fucked up.
Oh, get me started.
Yeah, well, you know, but I'm saying these are specifics of, you know, playing war games. No, it's one where they, Japan, there are places where they can, you know, do kickboxing, you know, it's active, and they get out their aggression or whatever, and then they do sports, and we do sports. But another thing for kids to sit there and play war games and wonder about how to make, you know, about making that real, because that's as real to them right? So I know we could. This
well,
is
we know that about consciousness because that's been, you know, our passion for most of our lifetime, to understand the mechanisms of consciousness and what goes in. You know, the mind doesn't know what's real and what isn't. It just gathers data.
Yeah, right.
And then from that data, we have our operating system, basically. You know,
exactly.
The brain is a computer.
Oh, the difference of it's very fortunate if whether from their parents or whether they get perspective to know the difference between playing Dungeons and Dragons or all the war games that they play, and that's just a game, and your life, you know, is outside of that, because so many of young people, and again, not just young people, you know, people with families, men that sit alone in those basements and eventually become so permeated with that stuff.
Correct. They don't know. They can't identify their authentic self from the programming that they've now allowed their consciousness to be imprinted with.
No.
They can't tell the distinction anymore
that. And
that's always the battle is, how, you know, it's like I'm always, you know, watching for those patterns, the good and the bad. You know, I know I have wonderful good patterns as well.
Oh, yeah.
The ones that are bad patterns, you know, just devastate me.
Yeah.
And I keep thinking I've, you know, battled it and beaten it and shot it and killed it and stabbed it to death, but then it shows up in some other insidious way. I always have to be on the watch for that.
Indeed. You know, that's why I told you I love those, some of those murder shows. There's one, I forgot his name. Brilliant. A serial killer. He's, I think, put away for life. Tall, very tall. I forget what his name is, but very intelligent and now able to talk about, you know, his whole history and what went through his mind. And you can see, you know, I mean, and now he understands. He's older and he, you know, has groups with younger men. But how he was in the grip of this since some horrible childhood. Right? And out of control.
Yes.
It was bad. But the other part of it is it was stimulating. They get to the point,
yes,
where they're so shut down by what happened to them that in order to get off and feel anything, you know,
right,
these psychopaths, they have to kill.
Yes.
They have to murder, suffocate, watch all kinds of distorted porn. And that's the world. Again, that is permeated with that, and then I feel,
yeah,
so threatening to who we are as people. You know?
Yeah, yeah. The human race, the great experiment, is at its peak of extremes.
Not going
extraordinary extremes.
Did you ever watch? Were you ever into George Carlin?
Oh my God, was he not so brilliant?
Brilliant. So he's gone now. I don't know, 10 years.
Way ahead of his time.
Way before
he was.
I have it. I've got George Carlin, The American Dream, because all the comedians say if he were here now, boy, he'd have a field day.
Yeah.
Then. And he
Isn't
said,
it true?
Thing, you know, I love the comment. I don't know if I said it to you in some former conversation. What he said was, he said, don't worry, Mother Nature. He says, don't worry about Mother Nature. He said, Mother Nature will be fine. He said, when she's had enough, she'll shake us off like a bunch of fleas.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And he eventually, he was irreverent and he was, they call him a nihilist, or he didn't believe in anything. But, you know, he was a great guy. He had a great marriage. His wife, they were in love, you know, till he died. She was with him. He had his daughter, you know. And again, he started out as a straight guy in a suit that used to come on the Ed Sullivan Show. I think he took acid, by the way, which I think, you know, drugs kind of, you know, set him off. But then he
expanded
went
his consciousness. Expanded his consciousness.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So he, and of course there were many others, but he was my, I mean, I can watch him and I'm you know, he's brilliant. And he had that, thank God, the irreverence.
Yes. You know,
to be able to make fun of it all and laugh about it all and entertain people. So that's the kind of, I mean, I'm not looking to diminish the horror at all of what goes on. I watch Al Jazeera. I see what goes on in the world. It's just horrific. And however, to keep you say, how do I aging? I do keep that larger perspective, you know, that allows me, to have these kind of conversations when I can find someone to have them with, and to observe from the point of view that I do observe from, which is an irreverent point of view. And, for my own sanity, because, you know, what can I do? You know, because if I start getting into, I miss my guy, my cat was this last one. Oh my God. You know, made me laugh all the time.
I know.
You know, and I miss him so much, and I can't just replace him. I can't. I don't even take care of him.
No, I understand. I understand, sweetie. Yeah. Well, my dear, you are irreplaceable in my life and the lives of many, many other people. We finally had an opportunity to have you on Wise Women and extrapolate some of your wonderful wisdoms to share with other people so that perhaps there is some growth to be found in this segment.
Indeed. So, and Kathy, of course, I wish you were nearer to, you know, but I tell you, I've gotten used to the climate up here. And I have some friends, you know, down in L.A. because it's gotten so hot, and where you are, of course, must be, that I don't think I could ever live in that climate. You know, because I think about where would I go for my supposed retirement. As long as I get work, acting work, I'll probably be here, you know?
Yeah,
but I understand. I can't even speculate. I don't know what kind of a health I'll be in. So the other thing, like I say, is one step at a time, one day at a time. And see what the moment brings me and make a choice in the moment. I don't even hardly make plans anymore. I don't, you know, because I have things, and even this, you know. But we were able to pull it off.
Yeah. Okay.
And of course, I'd love a copy of it. And I love you so madly. I mean, I do love you.
Thank you, Willa.
And you look
I adore great. You. You've always been a pillar in my life. And I share and cherish so many of the moments that we have had together. So with that, I'm going to say goodbye to everybody in our audience and thank them for listening and hope that they definitely could gain some insight from Paula Shaw, American actress and tremendous workshop facilitator at the Esalen Institute of the Max.
Okay.
All right, you, Paula.
Okay,
love
sweetie.
You.
You bet. Bye.
Care. Bye.
Bye.